Magnetism.
Okay, so now we have a rule in general that a Kohen tribe, the Levi tribe, but the Kohen of the Levi tribe is among his prohibitions, practical today, by the way, is he is not to contaminate himself from a corpse. That means when you go to funerals in religious places, they will have an outside room. Sometimes it's outside, sometimes it's indoors. They make it properly based on very severe set of laws to have the Kohen not be in the same room as a corpse. A Kohen has an issue, can even go to the hospital. Definitely to visit someone's very difficult, even a parent, let's say, God forbid, and a Kohen himself has to need some event. You need a leniency for a Kohen to go into a hospital because you have to assume in a hospital there are corpses, almost for sure, on the large hospital. As well, we'll get to that in a second. A Kohen driving down the Interborough might have an issue. Because there are trees there that go up over the graves of the Interborough and over the highway. I have a friend of mine, a Cohen, who would not go to Queens taking the Interborough. If you're on a plane, except for special planes, they used to have that thing, the TWA, was that a plane thing? TWA, right?
Yeah.
It don't exist anymore. I think they were the ones that used to make sure to keep the bodies separate, but I'm not a Cohen, so I'm not sure. There was a lot does it, yeah, but it used to be TWA, I think. No, the Allah always did it a little bit. Right? Why? Because a Cohen cannot be in the room with a corpse. Now, once he's contaminated, there's a question if he cannot do it again. We rule stringently. So technically, if a Kohen is once by a funeral and he messed up, then technically you go again to a funeral, but we avoid it. Kohanim, outside. If someone's in a room and God forbid someone faints in the middle of shul, while everyone screams, call Hatzalah, we'll call Bodenheim, the right thing to scream, Kohanim, get out. No, I don't know if that's the right thing. Maybe call Hatzalah first. I'm not sure. Depends how bad the situation is.
That's the roof over.
Right. You mean you that's why the Kohen can stay outside. As long as they're under the roof. He can't touch a corpse. Okay, that's pretty easy to avoid, in my opinion. Well, that would be my guess. Can't carry a corpse, that should be much easier. Will be carried by a corpse, probably pretty simple. But being in the same home, now the question is what that home means. That means technically a hospital might be division of rooms, an apartment building, but these become major issues. A Kohen has a biblical violation, by the way, except for seven relatives. Seven relatives, he is. We're going to say either permitted or obligated, debate, to contaminate himself for them. And the seven are, I think it's pretty obvious though, his wife, father, mother, brother, sister, son, and daughter. Pretty much direct blood relatives, right? Do it again. Wife, that's not a blood relative, okay. Then the next ones are easy. Father, mother, brother, sister, son, and daughter. What are you saying?
No, saying what he said.
Oh, so, and now again, so to those six or seven, there would be a permission, maybe obligation to contaminate himself. That, of course, only applies to a standard, regular, ordinary Kohen. But there's one, sometimes two, depends on the year. We have what's called a Kohen Gadol. Is there an English word for that? No English word for that.
Head call.
Head Kohen.
Go.
Head Kohen.
High priest.
High priest.
High priest, right? High priest. So there could be more than one high priest, by the way, because there could be a high priest on Yom Kippur. They set a second one aside. There's a high priest that goes out to the war. We're not going to talk about all these details, but the high priest, whatever that means. He cannot contaminate to the seven. So regular Kohen, nobody except for the seven, except we're not sure what that means, either must or can, but the Kohen Gadol, high priest, cannot to those seven either. So far I'm telling you basic psukim, basic Talmudic passage. Now the Talmud adds on, amazing idea. That's biblical law. And what, by the way, the Talmud here is discussing, might have cut in the last parak, is discussing the laws of mourning with a Yew. We're discussing what we discussed now, the laws of contamination. And the Talmud says, by the way, it's going to work out the same way. Who does a Kohen mourn for will be who he contaminates as well for. So for all the nearest of kin mentioned in the priest section, for whom a priest can contaminate himself, a mourner is to observe formal mourning. So it makes sense. A person mourns, a Kohen mourns for his wife, father, mother, brother, sister, son, daughter. Perfect sense.
No.
No one does. That no one does it, actually. But yes. For his wife, father, mother, mother. Now, the Gemara adds on that later on the rabbis added on. So up and down we're doing biblical. And we're again they're really discussing the laws of mourning here. Later on it was added on who? A brother from a mother or a sister from a mother. Because up until now we weren't thinking about it. We just assumed a brother meant a brother and a mother, but no, it always meant a paternal sibling. A paternal child doesn't count, paternal parent doesn't count. That's what it mattered. But the sibling has to be a paternal sibling. A maternal sibling, biblically speaking, out of the game. But here it says, know what? The rabbi said, you know what? We're not going to start separating brothers and sisters. We're one big family. You can mourn not contaminate, because that's a biblical violation. So the rabbis were inventing this mourning stuff. Now, mourning has biblical and rabbinic aspects. We're not going into the details, we're trying to stay on track. But definitely there are biblical obligations for mourning as well. Here the rabbi said, you know what? We're going to allow you to mourn for a brother or sister from the mother and an extra addition, a married sister. That means we didn't discuss this before, but the Talmud is telling us now that when it says a person can mourn and contaminate regular coin for a sister, it was limited to a single sister. A married sister now becomes, I don't know, non-coin, whatever the word is. Doesn't make a difference if you're married or coin or not.
She's a widow.
I don't remember. I think she's out.
She's divorced.
I'm not sure. I got to look it up. But that's what happens here. We're adding on a married sister. Now, when you read the Talmudic passage, it seems to be that the Talmud told about mourning, so it means they're adding on mourning. Because in the end, if you want to mourn over somebody, what's the big deal? You're sitting on the floor? We might not recommend it on a normal day, but okay, so you're sitting on the floor. You're not really doing anything crazy that will say don't do it. But I don't think when you read this Talmudic passage, you would say, by the way, a married sister, a maternal mother or brother, a Kohen could be contaminated as well. That's not what it's saying. The Talmud doesn't need to be saying this. Talmud discussed the laws of mourning. He's saying, by the way, mourning compares to contamination. And they added on a few mournings. It doesn't mean they added on contamination, because contamination is getting stepping on biblical laws here, which is a violation. A Kohen who contaminates himself is a biblical violation to a corpse. We're not going to have the rabbis come along and say, by the way, oh, we'll allow contamination. Rabbis don't have that power. That would be a simple Talmudic passage. Now we quote a Rambam, Maimonides, chapter 2, law 2 of the laws of Avel. Avel means mourning. Here it says. Oh, we'll stop from one already. One is biblically obligated to mourn for the following relatives. One is biblically obligated. Father, mother, son, daughter, paternal brother, and sister. By rabbinic ordinance, one must mourn for his consummated wife. Wife becomes a question we read. Now, number two. Even though a Kohen, that was regular people. Kohen may not become ritually impure, contaminated. A Kohen may not contaminate himself to his maternal brother and his maternal sister and his married sister, even a paternal married sister, here goes the wild words, one does mourn for them. Okay, that's fine. That's the Talmud of Pass we just read. That if you didn't get, you weren't listening. Here goes the extra words. In the case of a married sister, he mourns for her by biblical law. So when we read this Talmud of passage, we clearly seem to have added a married sister into the mourning process, which we said is a rabbinic addition and not a big deal, because mourning sitting on the floor, who cares? The Rambam openly states, in the case of a married sister, he mourns for her by scriptural law. And right away, when you're in general to know about reading a Rambam, I don't mind. The noise is what's bothering the camera. Not me at all. Oh, it's not bothering the camera. Right away, and when the Rambam was written, 1,000 years ago, on the side of the Rambam, 1500s, Beis Yosef, one of them, the Shulchan Aruch, they write it with real commentaries. Now, one of the reasons that the Rambam became somewhat controversial is because the Rambam codified the laws, and he did not source the laws. The Rambam writes, people don't have time to read the entire Talmud, just read me, I cover everything. Now, the Rambam, of course, knew Talmud by heart, and he understood to put all the Talmudic passages together. There might be a page here, a page there, a page here, and he's putting it all together and coming up with the answers, but he didn't source things. Became a bone of contention by some of the people who didn't agree with the Rambam. Raiva did not like that. Other people didn't like it. The Rambam had his other issues because he wrote on philosophy, but fine. In hindsight, or in long-term history, the Rambam has proven extremely valuable and extremely accepted, which is all good. But, so on the side, a lot of times, the rabbis on the side will tell you, by the way, this is what the Shulchan Aruch does, the Beis Yosef. So what he does is right away, he just tells you, by the way, this law, let me tell you where to look in the Talmud. Because people were reading it, didn't know where to look. So he would tell you right away, you go over here, look over here, look over here. And once in a while on the side as well, they would ask questions. The Rambam, the Talmud here, comes up with a different type of answer. Raiva did it as well. Rambam, we have a different type of thing. Right away, on the side of this Rambam, Beis Yosef time, 1500s, the Kesef Mishnah. Kesef Mishnah is the name of his interpretation. Really, it's the Shulchan Aruch on the side of the Rambam right away says, Rambam, what are you talking about? When you read the Talmudic passage Ma'akatan, it seems to clearly state that. Is that a phrase? Seems to clearly state that. Did you hear when I say extremely unique? What do you hear when I say?
Right, can't modify unique.
Can't modify unique. Well,
good. No, you said spoke with words.
Right. What I just said, I forgot what the words
is. Seems to clearly state.
It's right. So it seems and clearly. I thought we were a contradiction. Fine. So it seems to clearly state that the Gemara, that the married sister is not a biblical obligation. It said we added on the mourning of a married sister. But the Rambam openly states, you can't get more of a contradiction. In the case of a married sister, he mourns for a scriptural law. This right away became a question going back 500 plus years. Obvious question. We're learning this. We have the same question. What? Yes. The
question is, they say that you can only get, you're going to contaminate yourself for these people and you can mourn for these people. And later on, Rambam says, and also you can mourn for this one. Is that the question?
The Rambam says, in the case of a married sister, he mourns by scriptural law.
But in fact, the scripture doesn't say it.
The way the Talmud seems to say is, the Torah says a sister. Good question. So the Torah says sister. The Talmud seems to imply it means paternal only. The Talmud says, but the rabbis would say maternal and married, which meant they learned the word sister in a closed form. Sister meant literal paternal sister only. The Rambam's agreeing that a maternal sister is only rabbinic. He's disagreeing that the word sister includes married as well. That becomes the question. And again, a question asked 500 years ago, different approaches. But we're not doing Leviticus right now. So the obvious question that some of you are thinking is, why am I discussing this right now? So we're going to go like this. This week's Parsha. This week's Parsha has a story, has many stories. And the story which we discussed, go back to RabbiHovner.com. I don't remember what year we mentioned this in the beginning of one of the classes. Then we went on a different direction, but we brought this down. When you read the Chumash alone, this is how you should have understood the story. If you went to small cheder yeshiva, a religious school as a kid, this is what they would have told you. If you would have learned the summer months parshas, which people don't do, but if you would have, they would have told you this. Three great leaders of the generation of the desert, each merited through them a gift to the Jewish people for 40 years. Moshe Rabbeinu created the man, that sustenance. In fact, because of Moshe Rabbeinu's man, the first blessing of Birkas HaMazon, which is the grace after meals, was instituted by Moshe Rabbeinu. Open Talmudic passage. So when you're reading, the next time you're benching, grace after meals, benching, remember one thing. I am reading words that Moshe Rabbeinu created. Pretty impressive. Pretty, pretty good. That was Moshe Rabbeinu. Aaron HaKohen had the clouds of glory, and Miriam had the well of Miriam, where that has her name in it. So we discussed a couple years ago why Miriam's name is on the well, and Aaron's name Aaron on the clouds, and Moses' name not on the mount. That was a couple years ago. We did begin with this. So what happens is, basic situation is, as each one of the three meritors, even a word, I don't know, and one of the meritors pass away, the merit item stops. So this week's pastor is going to have Aaron HaKohen passing away. As soon as he passed away, the clouds of glory stop. You know what happens? Amalek attacks. We had a defense system better than the Iron Dome. The world knew it. And the world said, wait a second. Aaron died. System down. Let's go. That's what happened. That's later in the Pasha. We're now a little earlier in the Pasha. When Miriam passes away. Now, when Miriam passes away, what stops? The well of Miriam stops. Now, each time it didn't stop forever because they had the remaining siblings who re-energized it. So when Miriam passes away, no water, God tells Moses and Aaron, go toward the rock. The rest of that story we're not doing, to create the water happening again. Then when Aaron dies, the clouds stop. God tells Moses, don't worry, we're going to get it back on. When Moses stops, all three end. Talmud has a long story about when Moses dies, when the Jews went into Israel right then, what did they eat? They couldn't have eaten the man because the man stopped. And they didn't have any food yet because they didn't plant yet. And that's the Talmud we discussed years ago, relevant to the Korban Pesach. It's 39a in Kedushin. And the reason why was because they entered right before Passover. Did they have matzah available for Passover? Were they relying on the old man that was left over or not? We might have discussed that in the past as well. Anyway, reality. So if I ask you a simple question, why did the well of Miriam dry up when Miriam passed away? Yeah, well, I just said it. Miriam passed away, so the well dried up. The merit of Miriam didn't exist since she passed away. Therefore, we have to start it up again. That's the basic way of understanding it. But there's a medrash. We quoted it last time on RabbiHovner.com from the Kliyakar who discusses this at length. And we only discussed a few minutes of a class that we're now returning to. This we did not discuss ever. And the Kliyakar quotes a medrash. Medrash is like a Talmud. And the medrash says that Moshe and Aaron were mourning the loss of their sister. And the Jews were running around thinking of water. No water. But they weren't. No, I got that wrong. The Jews of Israel did not properly mourn Miriam. They didn't properly mourn Miriam. And because they did not properly mourn Miriam, God said to them, you know what? I'm going to have you appreciate her. And he stopped the well from going. So until now, we're learning Miriam died, automatic water stoppage. According to this medrash, that's not what happened. The Jews did not properly mourn Miriam Because they did not properly mourn Miriam, God wanted to remind them of what they're missing, so he stopped the water. What we spoke about a couple years ago, worth repeating since nobody goes back to watch it, is this amazing idea. Realize what happened. The water stopped, whatever reason we'll get to in a second. Moses has to be told to restart the program. Moses does something, minutia detail wrong. Many interpretations. He hit the rock. He hit the rock a second time. He screamed at the Jews. He was angry. Whatever interpretation you're going to go into, you could spend the whole month on that. And then the water starts again. And Moses is told, because you didn't sanctify my name, this week's parsha, you ain't going into Israel. If Moses go into Israel, we have an alternate history. We have no idea what it looks like. What happened that Moses didn't go into Israel? Because the water needed to be restarted. Why the water needed to be restarted? Until tonight, big deal. Water had to be restarted because Miriam died. No one made a mistake. But according to this Medrash, there was a big mistake. Had the Jews properly mourned Miriam, the water would not have stopped. The whole story wouldn't have occurred. And Moses would have gone into Israel. A mind-blowing concept to worry about. That means the Jews messed up the situation. And that's why it could be that Moses says to them, you guys were at fault. At one point, Moses says to them, now it makes sense. Because if you guys would have mourned, then we wouldn't have had a problem. The water wouldn't have stopped. We wouldn't have an issue. But you guys weren't properly mourning her. That's a problem. That's all a medrash, a musa shmuz that we can give for hours on how you do something right the first time. You don't suffer consequences later. Had the Jews mourned properly when they should have been, history would have been different. But since they didn't do it right the first time. What do they say? One stitch now as opposed to nine stitches later. I heard that phrase. Something like that.
Measure twice, cut once.
Whatever, exactly. Do all these things. Do it right the first time. But okay, they didn't. But.
Now you're thinking Moses and Aaron mourned for their married sister. How could they have mourned for her? She's married sister, and that's the proof that the Rambam brings.
The Chassam Sofer, grand rabbi of the world at the time, Pressburg was his main place, died in 1840. Chassam Sofer. In fact, he had a yeshiva that produced too many giants of the next generation. And there are descendants around today. Chassam Sofer had one of the great yeshivas, borderline of all time. Just the amount of superstars that came out. In fact, since it's almost 3 weeks, in my Eicha Sefer, the one on Eicha Strength to Fire, so in the biographies, a lot of times I'll cross-reference if someone comes from somebody. In that Sefer, when I quote the Chassam Sofer, I cross-reference, I think, seven different students I quote in that Sefer. It's mind-blowing how many of his students went on to write books, leaders in communities, in yeshivas. It's amazing. The Chassam Sofer answers. Chassam Sofer has, again, the question is, where did the Rambam come up with the idea that, biblically speaking, someone mourns for a married sister? The Talmud seemed to say that a married sister and a maternal sister was added by the rabbis. There's no mourning, biblically speaking, for a married or maternal sister. The Rambam said, married sister, we do. So I quoted you a minute ago that that we quoted a Medrash equal to a Talmud on some levels, many levels actually, and that the Medrash says what? That Moshe and Aaron were mourning for their sisters while the rest of Judaism was not. And that's what began the problem. They were mourning and the Jews were not. Therefore, the water stopped. So according to the Chassam Sofer, the Rambam's looking at that Medrash and saying, what do you mean Moshe and Aaron were mourning their sister? We know Kalev, I don't know if we know Kalev, but I guess we know Kalev as well. Kalev married Miriam. Kalev was definitely alive. He was alive last week when the spies, that's really 40 years earlier. That's a joke. But Kalev's even alive later on. Kalev made it to Israel, RabbiHavna.com. Kalev makes it to Israel as well. So the question becomes, Kalev and Miriam are married to each other. Why in the world is Moshe and Aaron living when? Biblical times. When it says the rabbis added on, that's not during the desert. No.
Thousands later.
In fact, most rabbinic ordinances were not kept in the desert according to the Maral of Prague. Long conversation, not for now. But that meant even a leniency. This would be a stringency. They didn't even keep the stringencies. Why would they keep a leniency like this? Why would they have mourned? So it must be. Rambam is learning, according to the Chassam Sofer, the Rambam is learning that the source for the Rambam is going to be this Medrash. How do you learn the Gemara? Either you're going to have to learn that the Gemara disagrees with the Medrash, or you're going to have to learn that the Rambam had a different manuscript and it only said maternal sisters, not married sisters as well. I don't know. No. But either way, he has a Medrash. He has a Medrash that says openly that Moses and Aaron were mourning their married sister. It doesn't say married sister, but that's what it means, since we know she was married. Important lesson. Go.
And at no point in the Chumash does it say that when she dies, what the reaction to Aaron and Moshe was to him? It doesn't say.
What it does say is, we don't have the Chumash here. What it does say You did just the youngest here. No, we don't. We have one here. What it does say, I think it's chapter 21, very interesting. It says Miriam died and they buried her. That was good. That was good. Oh, yeah, that wasn't that good. I thought it was good. Miriam died and they buried her. Now, when Aaron dies, it says the entire nation mourned. When Moses died, it says the nation mourned. It doesn't say the entire nation, something we have discussed in the past as well. But when Miriam dies, all it says, well, I don't want to say all, but all it says is, if I remember, it's 21. Yes. 20. No, 20. No. Yes. First verse in 20 says, the Israelites arrived in a body at the wilderness of Zin. Irrelevant. Fine. And the people stayed in Kadesh. Irrelevant. Miriam died there and was buried there. Doesn't say anything about the mourning. So some rabbis want to learn from here. That's where the Medrash knows that the people didn't mourn her. Because when you read the verse, it just said, and they were out of water. So again, we're learning the story as third graders. We're taught that, oh, since she died, they were out of water. Because verse 2 says the community was without water. We're learning, which again is good. Many people. Death, no water. This Medrash is saying, no, it's not death, no water. It's death. You know what's missing? This word's missing here. We don't have mourning. Because no mourning, therefore no water. Now, we once, I think, discussed in this class, just as a thing, because we're coming up to the 3 weeks now, for the second time I'm mentioning it, is that we said that Tu B'Av, the 15th day of Av, is a great holiday in the Jewish calendar. Why is it a great holiday in the Jewish calendar? Last page of Masechta Tainis gives six different reasons. One of the reasons is because during the 40 years of the wilderness, Tu B'Av, the 15th day of Av, was when they realized that the decree was over, which meant like this. There were 600,000 men divided by 40 years almost, and each year 15,000 people died when they hit the age of 60. Every time they hit the age of 60, because God punished the Jews for listening to the spies, on the ninth day of Av, what they would do is they would dig a grave, they would all get into the grave, and every year 15,000 wouldn't get up. Every year, 15,000 less, as the people in the desert are dying out, last week's Pascha. As we're getting closer and closer. The last year, 15,000 dig, and guess what happens? The next day, 15,000 wake up. And the Talmud says, they said, wow, how did that happen? It must be, we're looking at the sun and the moon, and we got the days wrong. Calendar days, old days, no atomic clocks. They got it wrong. They go back in. Every day they're getting up. They're not figuring it out. How off are we? Till it hits the 15th of the month. Full moon, they knew that's it. The game is over. We survived. The last 15,000 survived, according to the Talmud. They only noticed it the 15th day of Av. Therefore, they celebrated. I think we once discussed why don't they celebrate on the 9th of Av, because that's when the decree ended as opposed to when they knew about it. SiriusXM.com, I think we once discussed that. But someone has said like this, brilliant. That means when everyone died in the desert, how did they die? Were they buried first or died first? They first dug a grave, went in, and were buried. Then they died, except for the last 15,000 who didn't die. Miriam, they want to point out, says Miriam died and was buried because she was the first person that was died and then buried. Everyone else was buried and then died. She was died and then buried. So we have a question. What long are these words? Why did it say she died and was buried? One explanation is to point out that she was only buried, not eulogized properly or at all, whatever the word means. Not eulogized. Therefore, the next verse says, a water. The other way to say it is she died and she was buried because she was the first person in the desert who died and then was buried. Those are two explanations. But either way, we have now an argument on how to read these words. Was the death the order, the impetus for the no water, or was it not the impetus for the no water? And that would be a question of how to read this Rambam. And then we have as well the concept of death following death preceding the burial, and how that works out. And we will stop here because it's already getting late.